fixed your GarageBand file. What have you been up to?
Funny thing, it is snowing right now here too.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you can see it properly.
I can actually. Wow, that is. Do you have. Is that a bag of beef jerky in your window?
What I wish. It's my, since I've become bougie and I sort of sometimes care about my appearance, that is a shoe cleaning kit.
I feel I should apologize for assuming it was beef jerky, but in
Is off
fairness,
brand.
it looked kind of that like that orange and brown color scheme that is beef jerky. So,
I actually have my life savings and a beef jerky bag.
did you take the beef jerky out, or is your life savings in the form of beef jerky? And you're like, well, the US dollar is gonna collapse anyway. Might as well just depend on beef jerky.
It's just money, but that is not a terrible idea, honestly. If I could turn my money
Man.
into beef jerky and then somehow uptrade that,
You know, the end of days is coming, so.
I'll just have a fortune in dehydrated meat.
Oh, God, this is super embarrassing, but probably funny. The more I talk to, the more being on social justice websites happens, the more survivalism starts to look like a good idea. Like, I was on Amazon.com the other day looking for a book, and I was like, should I also buy some MREs? Like, I did not buy any MREs, but I had that moment where I was like, should I buy this book on visual forms of knowledge production, or should I buy 50 vegetarian MREs? Because one, the outrageous price of academic publishing means that they're about the same cost, and two, we're all gonna die.
It's not it's better to be prepared than to be like in the thick of it and be like, damn it, I could have had the MRE right now.
Instead, I bought a bunch of books from the University of Kentucky's holiday sale, so I didn't do either. So I'm definitely going to die, but it might be under like a book avalanche rather than the Trump jackals getting to my bones. So.
This is a deep reference, and it's only because I've been watching Avatar, rewatching Avatar that it came up. But you'd be like that scholar who finds that like treasure trove of lost books, and it caves in on them, and they're like, "Aren't you gonna come?" And he's like, "Nah, just leave me here with my books."
I mean, to be honest, you know that Twilight Zone episode where the guy is like, oh shit, it's the apocalypse. I can finally read my fucking books in peace. But then he breaks his glasses.
The saddest moment in cinematic history.
First of all, that kind of happened to me during winter break my senior year in college, where it was the first evening of winter break, so we hadn't been kicked off campus yet, but it was like the first evening without classes or assignments, and I sat on my glasses and they broke. So I was like, oh, just playing out of the Twilight Zone. And secondly, that's sort of how I picture my life post-Trumpocalypse, because my vision's definitely gonna keep getting worse. Like, this is the best I'm ever gonna be able to see. Plus, now that there's gonna be no insurance for anybody except for the mega rich. Yeah, I'm just making coffee also while we talk. It's fine.
No, that's perfect. I
Yeah.
was shocked. They're really going for the ACA, huh?
Oh my God. Who knows where it'll be by the time this episode is published, but as of right now, there's still time to call your senator.
I want to say that you can call your senator anytime, but I don't know. I mean, assuming that that's not true.
No, you can. And I think it's important to note on a very serious level that, like, even after they accomplish whatever garbage they're going to accomplish, it's still appropriate and necessary to call your elected representatives and express your opinions on that, as long as we have voting rights, which may not be particularly long term, but until they get rid of the voting rights, well, they already got rid of the Voting Rights Act. If you don't live in North Carolina or similar, call your representative. If you do live in North Carolina, I'm both jealous and sorry for you. Whoops. Yeah.
North Carolina is... It's a heyday, but for, like, only a third of the people that live there.
Yeah, it's... They're calling back. They're really... I mean, they like to say it's heritage, not hate, and we're being reminded that their heritage is not letting people vote or survive.
let's be real. In the Bible, the first, like, 100 pages are just straight up murder. Heritage is sort of hate.
Yeah, it's not just the South, it's really a lot of places in these United States, and elsewhere, but I'm pretty jingoistic when it comes to my judgments.
Jingoism forever.
Yeah, so, you know, the end is fucking nigh. But at least there's already a Twilight Zone episode about my future. I don't know that there's a Twilight Zone episode about Shoe Karen beef jerky, but I believe in you. I believe, even without media representation.
This is the year. This is the year that we'll finally get a black Twilight Zone.
I mean, it's not a bad manifesto, right? It's not a bad thing to work for.
There was that weird period in the 90s where it wasn't Lawrence Fishburne was running the show. It wasn't good, but it was technically diverse.
You remember how this is a comics podcast?
I've been reading a lot of the works of Joan Juan Cornella, but it's spelled Joan. And he has a lot of weird peace stuff going on.
Oh, he's the guy who does, I don't know what they're actually called, but it's the really painted look and stuff that's sort of drawn almost in the style of, like, I want to say, like, highlights for kids, but then it's grim.
Yeah. Yep. That's the one.
Yeah. A lot of pee stuff.
A lot of pee stuff.
Do you want to talk about your opinions on those comics? Because I will cop to the fact, and this probably shouldn't surprise you, that I don't like them very much, because I don't like, I mean, okay, I'll call myself out on this. I'm extremely prudish. So while I affirm the value or whatever of comics that, I don't necessarily affirm the value of, I get it. But I don't really get it. So do you want to talk about why you're reading them and if you like them and what you like about them?
Absolutely. I haven't read his books yet, but I'm ordering one because I do love, I love dark humor. I love really dark, depressing things because it's like I'm depressed, and then when someone else is like, I'm depressed too, I'm like, yeah.
Do you find his work depressive? Because I have not read it that way. I've read it as gross, but to me, it doesn't really seem like it has the. I don't think the emotion is there to make it depressing. I think it's dark in a gross way, but not dark in a depressive way to me.
Yeah. That's like some of them get me like right in the like there's the ones that are very gross out humor, like a lot of fluids, a lot of like genital stuff, and then there's like the ones, the police killing ones are the ones that are my favorite because they're very blunt and really the absurdity makes it even harder to be like, oh, this is actually, this could easily happen in that way, but.
Maybe I just haven't seen those because the only ones I've really seen are the genitals and piss stuff ones. So it's good to know that there is more to it than that.
There are levels, but it is a lot of like you see someone in a shower and then the hose to the shower turns out to be a weird bear's junk. I'm sending like this one. It's like the sound that you just heard was an image.
Yeah. Neither of us are capable of making that noise unassisted by a technology.
One.
Yeah, that's that is sure something.
It's very uncomfortable to laugh at, but it is funny, and that's why I like him so much.
Do you want to describe it to our listening audience?
So there's a black gentleman running in what appears to be a marathon, and he's got the garb, the tank top, and the sweatband. And a cop sees him and shoots him in the back, but finishes the race afterwards and wins. And the last panel is the cop getting held up in the air with a trophy in a parade of celebration.
Yeah, an ocean of beaming white people.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound funny, but the way it is drawn is very.
It's for people who are maybe not super familiar with his work. I don't know, I think I use deadpan too much to describe things, but it is very much in the style of children's magazine illustrations, with the sort of fixed faces, simple shapes, highly stylized people and flat colors. Not a lot of depth, not a lot of shading, and the panel layout of them, I would say, and you should correct me or intervene at any point in here, it's a very straightforward sort of one action per panel look in basically square panels. Very simple to read, very clear all the time exactly what's happening, in contrast to the marked surrealism and sometimes horror of what's happening.
That's perfect. It's like the. Did you ever read Sports Kids?
No, I've never read anything with sports in the title.
That's not true.
Yeah, no, that's actively a lie because I read fantasy sports. But it's very nearly true. All right, what the hell is Sports Kids?
Sports Kids, like, was when it's the magazine isn't called Sports Illustrated, used to do this magazine for kids, and I got it, and there were these little
Did you
weird
like
comics.
sports as a child?
I liked playing sports, and I used to volunteer for the Special Olympics. So my
Oh.
mom was like, "You do this now. Here you
Huh.
go."
Okay, that's, I mean, way to be a good person, I guess.
I wasn't.
Okay, so what's the upshot of Sports Illustrated Kids?
They did the panel layout is very similar to the High Life that you were saying, and the it's like a kid's comic. It's structured like a kid's, very simple to read and follow, but it just happens to be really unsettling.
You know what it reminds me of is Johnny Ryan's comics. I don't know if you know, he did among other things, Prison Pit. But it doesn't remind me of Prison Pit. It reminds me of his gag comics. He did a whole series of I'm trying to look up while we talk, so I think it was called Comic Book Holocaust, as distinct from like comics about the Holocaust, which is a very serious thing that comics likes to do. But this is just Johnny Ryan doing send-ups of a ton of different comics from like classic newspaper strips. Those are the ones that I really remember. And send up is not necessarily the right word, but like maybe. Anyway, his parodies of classic newspaper strips. That's kind of what Cornell's work reminds me of.
I'm looking at some of the, yeah, I see that a lot. It reminds me of Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah. Although I think Cornella tends to maybe, as much as they're both like, haha, piss or whatever, piss and genitals, Ryan is a little bit more likely to just reproduce racism and sexism, whereas I think Cornella mostly, I don't know if I want to say to his credit, mostly just sticks to being gross. Like with a few exceptions, his stuff is either, as you pointed out, a dark satire, which I didn't necessarily know about, or just regular gross. Whereas Johnny Ryan is much likely to do something that's like right up on that line of like, I think this is just racist.
It's a fine line. It's a fine line to tell.
Although now I'm looking at a Cornella comic that's some dude handing a child a card that says Jesus loves you, and then the dude has a name tag that says Jesus, and the kid has a deadpan expression. And then Jesus's dick is out, and I'm like, oh, well, don't want to give you too much credit, my dude. Like, I guess, what good is that comic doing the world?
Yeah, you get like one serious outlook for every 500 dick jokes.
I mean, that's not a dick joke. That's a pedophilia joke. Like,
There it is.
the joke is, haha, his dick's out, But the rest of the joke is his dick's out because he wants to fuck a child. And there's a difference between a joke where the joke is his dick's out and the joke where the joke is his dick's out because he wants to put his dick in a child.
Oh, it's an actual kid.
Yeah, it's a literal child. I mean, it's not a literal child. It's a picture of a child. If we want to go down that, ceci n'est pas un enfant. Route, right? C'est une bande dessinée avec une image d'un enfant. Mais c'est un enfant is a child.
Oh, I found it.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's uncomfortable. That's pedophilia, for sure.
So, you know, I don't want to ascribe social utility to this dude's work necessarily, but he certainly has a somewhat different ethos than Johnny Ryan overall.
It's not the worst of worlds. It's like one of my favorite comics ever. Not him, but one of my favorite comics is by comics artist is Patrick Ryan, and he's got a lot of great stuff, and, oh, Patrick Alexander, my mistake. I've been fucking up names recently.
Well, we were just talking about Johnny Ryan, so.
Like, he'll have a great joke, and then he'll have one that's just dick nose. And it's literally a guy with a nose for a dick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I still, I think there's some interest that I have, fairly or unfairly, in distinguishing between something like dick nose, which is basically harmless. Like, dude's nose is a dick. Like, okay. Like, gross, but whatever. The joke is just a dick versus a time when that dick is being used in a way that is harmful. Like, I guess one could extend the logic of dick nose to some sort of harm that dick nose does to people with his nose dick, but that's not where the dick nose comic seems to be going. It seems to be he just fails to self-satisfy, because you see he can reach the dick nose with his tongue, but then he can't anymore. Which is basically harmless. Like, that's not a joke with any particular, social relevance.
That we know of.
Okay, alright. I don't want to insult the dick-nosed community here. Yeah, so, I didn't really have a point there, and I kind of, told you to talk about something, and then I talked over you, which is kind of how the trades goes a lot. So if you want to talk more about those comics, you should, by all means, do that. I just think, here's my actual comment here, that it's weird to note, and this is always true of satire, but the ways that just grim and just gross and that with some sort of social connection happens, like, it's sure something.
It's a delicate dance.
Yeah.
A grotesqueness that has been used as a, a way to fight the power, in a way to...
But then it can also reinforce the idea that certain people or certain situations are most appropriately viewed as punchlines. So, we're not going to resolve satire on this program today, although, you know, I think it should be illegal. I think nobody should legally be allowed to make any jokes. First of all, jokes result in a prison term now. Second of all, certainly not in comics, because nobody who likes comics can be trusted. Yeah, that's most of it. I think that covers it.
Yeah. who did it. It's trust no one.
So anyway, have you been reading anything else?
I've been reading a lot of Cucumber Quest.
Oh, word?
Yeah, I found that, and I've been enjoying that, because it's intrepid and very fanciful.
Yeah, it's super cute. I haven't been keeping up, not for any particular good reason, but it's, like, it's a good comic.
It's gotten, there finally seem to be, not wrapping it up, but going towards a conclusion.
Making some plot advance?
Yes. Which is, you know, I'm a sucker for plot.
Yeah, it's, for people who do not know about it, it's a really good all-ages webcomic, I guess, that is set in a fantasy world that is a little bit, it's not a parody of a fantasy world, but it is self-aware of fantasy tropes, and it both sort of works at odds to them and at variance from them and references them as is useful.
That's on point. It's like Steven, it's very Steven Universe and the use of very bright paneling, very bright pictures, but then there are a lot of feelings in the background. Well, the stuff about is there really even a right side? Does any of this, do we matter? It's just like, then they'll do something cute, and then someone else will say something existential.
Yeah, it's walking that balance between being a silly and enjoyable comic and then hinting at some greater themes. Doing some goofs, but then also, like, doing some soul-searching.
Everybody needs to do that.
I mean, it's the end of the fucking world, man. Do we even have time for soul-searching, though? Do we even have time? Gotta get our MREs.
Get your MREs while they're still on discount.
Yeah, before they are the only currency.
This Trump stakes.
Oh no. I mean, turning them into beef jerky might be a way to make Trump stakes edible. I don't think you need as fancy of meat cuts to make jerky. I'm not an expert on jerky making, but I did used to read a lot of books like Hatchet, so I kind of get it. A lot of tweens in the wilderness.
There are a lot of tweens in the wilderness.
I don't know if that's true, but I know there are a lot of books about tweens in the wilderness.
This is, kids need to be taken away from their phones and put into the woods.
No.
That was a hard line.
I am staunchly against dropping children in the wilderness because I don't actually want children to die.
Are teens children? You know?
Yes! They're not adults.
Okay.
You can't give them the death penalty, so they're children.
That is a good guideline. That's fair.
Yikes. Okay. So, two very different comics there, Cucumber Quest and the assorted works of that guy. Anything else?
Not really. I saw Suicide Squad.
Boo.
I mean, yeah, that's apt. That was essentially what I was gonna say. It's really bad. And it's sad because some of the comics were alright. Also, where's Ragdoll? What's that about?
I don't understand your nerd bullshit.
Listen, I'm just saying that Suicide Squad was bad.
Okay.
And they should feel ashamed of themselves.
They definitely don't. I think they're planning a sequel.
Jesus.
Admittedly, I heard that the sequel was more rumor than fact at this point, but that doesn't mean it's not real. Because so, people like money.
They make money,
though. Oh, God.
They lost that money. At this point, it's like they're gambling.
Yeah.
They're losing every single time.
Maybe they'll realize that nobody likes superheroes, and they'll end that whole thing. So am I correct in assuming that you have read none of the retrofit comics that I sent you?
I read the Mr. I forget his name.
Mr. Hayden?
Yeah.
So yeah, you've read none of the retrofit comics I sent you. That's fine. Just checking on that.
No.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It just means we haven't read any of the same stuff this time.
That's part of the charm.
Is it? Okay. Well, let me say, I sincerely recommend you read Our Mother by Luke Howard. It's kind of a difficult read in some ways, but it's a absurdist and indirect take on inherited depression.
I like the art style.
Yeah. It's a really fun looking comic, and it's, I don't know, despite having done my Division 3 on Autobio, and despite the real love I have for the genre, I feel like a lot of Autobio gets kind of repetitive in the ways that it can present, especially mental illness or like overcoming challenges, where it's like, the challenge is still with me, but I have grown as a person. That narratorial voice that comes through in a lot of that shit, I hate it. At this point, I'm like super obnoxiously against that. But somehow, a story that works on a similar moral, but that goes at it very, very indirectly, has a lot of appeal to me. So in a way that I would probably, lose all patience and interest in a comic presenting approximately the same emotional message about intergenerational trauma of having depression and being raised by someone with depression that, Our Mother does, I would lose patience with that in a more direct format. But since it has a full page of farting hot dogs, I have nothing but love and respect for this weird-ass comic.
I'm assuming that that's not a euphemism.
No, that's literally a page of farting hot dog. It's technically, it's the same farting hot dog, but, a series of panels of it. But, yeah, it's a page of farting hot dog.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's... And the farting hot dog sort of has that... what would be the sort of intolerable voice of like, here's the perspective on what you just read. I've probably had some kind of depression my whole life, but it got really bad in my late 20s. Like, quit my job and move in with my mom, and have my mom move in with me, bad. It took a long time to get it under control, and I still deal with it on a day-to-day basis. I avoided meds for way too long. I guess I felt ashamed to use them, and I was a bit worried that they would change me. But some people just need that help, and so on. But instead of being overlaid over, like, a drawing of himself and his mom, or a montage of exactly what he's describing as he, like, falls into a better place emotionally, it's over a farting hot dog. So it's genius.
Alright, that's pretty great.
Yeah, so I genuinely recommend that. It was actually, it was kind of a theme in that batch of retrofit comics, like familial the problem of family, maybe. Because Libby's Dad by Eleanor Davis looks at one family's particularly difficult experience of divorce, but through the perspective of friends of the young girl involved. So the ways that other people's family trauma becomes rumor. So situating that family.
Oh, I did read this.
Okay, yeah. So then the ways that one family and one family's problems exist in a community, especially when young children are involved. Did you like it, by the way?
I liked it a lot. I liked the open, not use of panels. I like that a lot.
Yeah, Eleanor Davis is a brilliant illustrator, and it's not like a children's book, but it's definitely not a traditional panel layout.
Really good use of pacing. There it is.
Yeah.
I like the dad not being seen at all, except when he's either doing something awful or cleaning a mess, and then he's just not even. It's interesting to have a story with a focal point where the focal point doesn't say anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the premise, is like, it's not about who he is necessarily, but about the ways that they can't or never will anyway know who he is. So it's less about Libby's actual dad and more about the space that the problem of Libby's dad occupies and creates.
Her drawing style is really interesting.
Yeah, Eleanor Davis is great. I don't know if you've read other stuff by her.
No, this is the one and only so far.
It's not always crayon. She's not a one medium pony, as it were. But yeah, her art is super, super good.
That nail polish is intense.
Yeah.
I liked her. It's like, they do this whole, like, oh, what you think about people isn't always true. And then at the end, that they just do it to the mom, too. And it's like, oh, yep.
Yeah, I would not have read it as what you think about people isn't always true. I was much more sort of, I don't know, I was much more interested in the possibility that it was true. That these kids did not have enough information to know things that were directly about their safety, that they were never going to have that information, and that the community at large was very ready to wholly condemn either the mother or the father on the basis of that information, and to put children, to make choices about their children who have very little relative power entirely based on that. And the ways that children, and that reminded me a little bit of This One Summer, the ways that children sort of repeat those messages, the bit where it's like, which is basically proof that Libby's mom is crazy and a liar. So, yeah, that's the last piece, that's the last text in the book, actually, and it's directly opposite a picture of what we assume is Libby's mom crying looking at fruit by the foot.
I thought that was, like, what she was doing right there in that moment.
Well, there was the rumor earlier, where they're, like, hanging out in the pool, where, the main, not the main character, the perspective character, the narrating character says, "I saw her crying at Safeway once. Last week she was looking at a box of fruit by the foot." So that's the kids trying to put together the very little information they have to figure out which one of her parents is crazy and a liar. So either the dad really is a threat to their safety, or he is really not a threat to their safety. But is that the same thing as he did or he didn't actually threaten Libby's mom? And, like, what's the social condemnation and lack of social support for women reporting domestic violence is a real problem. And on the other hand, how does one deal with socially, politically false allegations of domestic violence? How does one, and how does a community work around a functional, and I would say socially important, because kids playgroups are very, like, that's a whole thing. It's a whole little tiny social industry. How do those operate around someone who was a functional member of that social group's operations having a meltdown? Like, what do we do with that whole concept? And I thought this sort of very gracefully alluded to all of those things. So, yeah, it's, I don't think not everything you hear about people is true is a bad reading of it, but I do think it's necessarily only the tip of the iceberg, because anytime you have something that's about families and gendered violence, you have to talk about gender. I mean, you don't have to. I'm not the government. I can't make you, but...
Yeah, those are... It adds a whole new connotation to a lot of it, when you put it that way. Like, especially the gossiping scene at the pool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When you were a youth, I don't know to what extent, and I don't want to, like, call out people we know here, since you went to high school with people who might actually listen to this, versus, oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry, I occasionally pull up Facebook in the background as we talk, because I'm compulsive about it. Don't judge me. Two of my high school friends just literally got literally married to each other, which is viscerally horrifying.
You seem upset.
I mean, the upshot, before I got distracted by the fact that I'm lagging behind my peer group, even the terrible people, is, like, I think everybody has at some point some experience of, like, the parent rumor mill going around other people, and that experience when you're young and you very much do lack a lot of agency of, you know, you try to piece together the truth of other people's situations without all the information and without a sense of really what's appropriate or safe to ask about. And you're just starting to internalize things like calling women crazy and a liar. But you don't necessarily have a broad context for what that means socially and politically. I don't know. I have a lot of opinions on it because I, unsurprisingly, I like to think of my middle school, especially social clique, as like the bad mom social clique. Like, it was a whole group of us who had some kind of mommy problem, and that was basically why we were friends. It wasn't why we were friends, but it was, like, a large part of how we were friends. So, I don't know, to me, that was, from that experience of, like, without wanting to further call out anyone I know, especially since there's a very small chance that someone I actually know might listen to this podcast, besides Jeremy Hawkins, I don't know, does that make any kind of sense to you, that experience? Because to me, that's what Libby's mom or Libby's dad was about, was like the feeling of like existing in a world that is cut off in some ways from this other world, the adult world, where people are making choices and evaluations that affect you very, very much, but you have limited access to knowledge of and limited control over, and you obviously have your own shit going on. So the moments where those worlds intersect in ways that you whiff just a hint of trauma on the wind. So developing, as young people, responses to trauma and sort of feeling out how one deals with other people's trauma, and then how social groups sort of respond broadly to trauma and conflict.
Sort of like that. I get that a lot, actually. It's that phenomena of like, when you see an adult as a kid, you're always looking up at them. And if you keep in contact with them, you're still always kind of looking up at them, no matter what their height is. It's always like a little, for me anyway, it's always like they're always that tall. They're always that much further away.
Yeah, maybe. And then the sense also that you're, I don't know, because the family part of it is important to me. The sense that this is people's families making choices about them. And you're right that eventually these kids in Libby's dad will be adults. And eventually they're going to reevaluate the situation with Libby's dad, who has taken on sort of mythic proportions here, evaluated as adults and with more agency and more perspective, but he's still going to be, it's still going to be a semi-mystical event, something that happened out of their control and that they can't really know about, but that they'll know differently. So yeah, community traumas, gendered traumas, and then the real distinction between the adult world and the child world.
My friend's parents got divorced when we were like 10, because it turned out his dad was gay, and it was one of those like, oh, I'm gay. And then we would still go over and pretend that we were Sonic the Hedgehog and co. But there'd always be a weird, because it wasn't like he moved out or anything. They stayed, they tried to work it out, and then they split. So it'd just be like a weird ambiance throughout it of like robots pretending to be people, but everybody knows they're robots. everybody's too scared to say something.
Yeah. I mean, a good metaphor, right? Like, and you got whispers around the edges, maybe, that like, did you hear about how they're a robot? And you're like, yep, gotta keep acting like they're people, though.
Do not upset the balance.
Yeah. And I guess, I hate being tediously literal with metaphors and settings, right? But they're in an interestingly liminal space of becoming aware of this adult world, but still in the world of children. And they're in a new house, I think, if I recall correctly. They're in a new house that he's just bought that has a pool. And they're at a sleepover, and that's three different sort of layers of liminality of like they're in and out of the water, and they're in this new house that's not really a lived-in home yet necessarily. And a sleepover is like a disruption of your normal. So even if it's not like liminal, and they're in adolescence, obviously, it's a space that you're not at your home, but you're not just visiting because you're staying there for a little bit. So, an interesting sort of way of really physicalizing that disruption to the domestic order, I think.
Domestic order is all there is.
That's all that stands between us and a world of MREs and beef jerky is currency.
Yes, honestly. As soon as people realize that marriage is a corporate scam, we're doomed to
Well, thankfully, we still have people I know holding that together. Fuck. People getting married. Can you fucking imagine?
No. The people who I think are gonna get married in my life, I've known like a few people who have been married and been like, yeah, but most of the time I'm just like, this is bad. This is no offense, but this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea.
I try not to judge. That's a lie. I can't even finish that with a straight face. You've known me too long to for me to pass that off as slightly true. I live to judge.
I was surprised to hear those words.
I just wow reacted their wedding announcement. That's where I'm at as a person right now.
It's
Well,
not bad.
it's not explicitly bad. Yeah, I don't know. I used to have a stand-up joke, you probably remember it, about the first wave of mistake engagements, where like it was the first bunch of people just out of high school getting engaged to their high school sweethearts. And now there's people actually literally marrying them. It's like my peer group. I gotta do something with my life, man. Besides this podcast, which is great, and which is obviously doing something with my life, our podcast is important and everyone should listen to it.
It's really informative and fun and good for your skin. Yeah.
I only wish that were true. I still have really bad winter skin. I'm gonna close Facebook because I just can't keep watching this crisis unfold.
Did they already get divorced?
No, it's fine. It's just everybody I know from high school is liking their fucking wedding status, so now I have to have opinions about everyone I knew in high school. Obviously, I don't have to. I've chosen to be like that.
There's like so many goals that that will be accomplished in your lifetime.
We'll
Some
see.
of them by you.
Harsh, harsh, but true.
I'm sorry.
Unless we have another comic we want to talk about, I'm gonna end recording there because that's, I think, a high note of like, yep.